Good morning and welcome to Backchat. I'm Hugh Jewett and your co-host today is Ada Wong. Good morning to you, Ada.
Good morning, Hugh.
It's time to put down those bikini pictures because we're trying to focus on the budget today. Yesterday, the financial secretary warned that if expenditure kept growing and economic and revenue growth fell, that meant that a structural deficit would be inevitable. So he reduced some of the one-off measures he's introduced in the past and also spoke about a future fund to kickstart infrastructure projects. Well, what do you make of the budget? Tomorrow, the financial secretary himself will be with us between 8 and 9, so it's a chance to marshal your arguments now. Give us a call with your thoughts. Our number is 233 88266. You can text us 6393 5925, or you can go to our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio 3, and comment there. After 9:15, we're talking about the brutal attack on Kevin Lau, editor of the Ming Pao. Joining us for our first discussion, we have with us Lee Chuck Yan, legislator, chairman of the Labour Party. In our central studio is David Webb, founder of website.com, shareholder activist, and we hope to be joined by Kenneth Lung, who's a legislator who represents the accountancy functional constituency, and Starry Lee, executive counsel and also a legislator with the DAB. Lee Chuck Yan, first of all, what did you make of the budget?
I feel that the budget, of course, the financial secretary tried to present himself as a guy who has a lot of fiscal discipline and a worry about the future. But and then he tried to talk about what he called a future fund. And it seems that, you know, all he care about is brick and mortar. You know, when he talked about his future fund, he said that we need money for the infrastructure. Again, every time Hong Kong, when we discuss about economic future, we only talk about bricks and mortar. And I think that's the only thing, the buildings and buildings and buildings. And it's, once we talk about investing into the people, in education and medical and social welfare, then he will talk about, that will be a burden for Hong Kong and we need to restrain ourselves from spending too much. So again, I think it's very disappointing that this is the same old tune of the financial secretary wanting only to invest into infrastructure and not into the people. So we believe that for economic future of Hong Kong, we need to invest in the people and not just bricks and mortar. And I think the whole budget is only about infrastructure and not and restraint on other expenditure. And I think he also tried to present a very bleak view of the future income and seems to suggest that there will be a structural deficit. I think the problem now in Hong Kong from our reading is there's a structural surplus if we are not going to spend. And instead of, you know, always having a structural surplus, we should really spend on the people and on the recurring expenditure and not on a one-off way of, you know, paying out goodies, so-called. We are not for goodies, one-off payouts. We are for goodies in the budget, in the recurring expenditures.
What do you make of the reduction of the sweeteners from 30 billion to 20 billion this year?
Yeah, we are not, Labour Party is not for sweetener on a one-off basis. We are for sweetener on a long-term basis. So it should be into the budget, into the recurring expenditure. And so if we are able to, you know, invest in the future, invest in sweetener into our policy in social welfare, medical, you know, really benefiting
people. But I just
people.
Read that there will be a rise of 9.7% as far as welfare spending is concerned.
It's because
so that's a big rise.
But when you compare with the problem, it's not really a big rise. You know, we really need to, you know, strengthen our base in expenditure on spending on, you know, really helping the poor people, especially the elderly in Hong Kong. When you look at the 9.7% increase in welfare, and mostly it goes to the elderly. But when you look at the situation of elderly in Hong Kong, people are still queuing up for home care places, and very often they can get the places only after they die, you know. So we still have a big problem there, and so we really need to strengthen our base. So the increase in terms of percentage is not really useful when we have a very weak base In terms of, you know, spending on the people.
Okay. Starry Lee, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for joining us. I was struck by, what Lee Chek-Yan was saying there about infrastructure. Infrastructure was the largest spending in the past year, more than education, more than healthcare, more than social welfare. And he's talking about establishing this future fund to facilitate even more spending on infrastructure in years to come. Why is that focus there?
Well, I think overall the balance, this year budget, we believe, have struck a balance between the livelihood request and the need for financial sustainability balance. And in reply to your question, I think, we have to have a good infrastructure in order for Hong Kong to develop further. And, of course, putting more resources to infrastructure doesn't mean that we do not care for
but
the aging population.
More than to anything else. It's just a bit unbalanced.
I think this recent year is a bit strange because when we look back, we know that we just keep up to the previous request. Like currently we have like a 3 to 4 railway under construction, but I think this peak will be over, and I don't think this level of infrastructure will continue in the future. But having said that, we can't say that we don't need to spend a substantial amount of money to infrastructure, because infrastructure doesn't mean only building railway, and we need to have other infrastructure developed for Hong Kong to become and continue to become an international and attractive city.
Because, you know, he was talking about increasing fees, increasing, you know, slimming down government departments, broadening the tax base, maybe raising tax in other ways and so on, you know, generally acting as a tighter ship. And yet the infrastructure spending just keeps going bigger and bigger.
I think there are a lot of reasons for these numbers to keep bigger and bigger. First of all, the price. We all understand that nowadays the construction price is on a very alarming increasing
trend. You're talking to someone from RTHK here, so we know about such issues. Yeah, carry on.
But, I mean, if you look at it, we built a cruise terminal, which hardly anybody uses. And there's this tunnel between Sha Tin and the western part of Kowloon, which hardly anybody uses that. And then there's the Stonecutters Bridge, and you don't see that many cars. So it's now open for bicycle races and the Walk for a Million. So, and you are talking about billions of dollars there. And, you know, infrastructural projects are actually important, but we have to look at, you know, whether they are needed, you know, as a start.
I think now the infrastructure that is under construction include the Southern Railway Link and Sha Tin Central Link, and also all these high-speed train. All these, I think we will have a lot of people to expect it to be complete as soon as possible, and we expect a lot of passengers to use that. I don't think it is not necessary, right?
Okay, all right. Well, let's go to David Webman, perhaps. Good morning,
morning
to you. What are your thoughts, first of all, on the infrastructure and the place of infrastructure in the overall budget for Hong Kong?
There's too much of it, and it's reflective of the silo mentality that the government is pursuing with the Capital Works Reserve Fund. All the land premiums go into that, and they basically see that as a pot that needs to be spent. They have a construction lobby that continually pesters them for more projects, up to the point that they've decided they need to build an artificial island in order to generate the demand for more bridges, because we're running out of bridges to build.
Yeah, that's really absurd, you know, to build island.
Nearly all the possible bridges you could build on the map of Hong Kong are either under construction or have been built. And the infrastructure spend is not going to be going down, as Starry suggests, because they haven't even included in the numbers they've mentioned the cost of the third runway, which will be another $100 billion, and the cost of the East Lantau metropolis and the bridges that connect it and so on. So there's an endless stream of outflows, and it's incentivized by the fact that we need to reform our land lease system. We take all the money up front as premiums rather than taking higher ground rents over the future lifetime of the leases, which ought to be nearly perpetual, 999 years in my view, rather than 50. And you should take a percentage of rateable values, not 3% as we do at present, but 30%. And then that money would be useful in the future when you do need it for changes in the demographics of Hong Kong. But because they keep putting money into silos, even down to not just the Capital Works Reserve Fund, but things like the Employees Retraining Board, they dumped $15 billion into that last year, which has now been approved by the Finance Committee of LegCo, without necessarily knowing that the Employees Retraining Board is going to need that money. And it's going to be very hard to retract those money from the various quangos of Hong Kong and put it back into general reserves. There was no restructuring of finances in the budget. They didn't touch the progressive rates of salaries tax. In my view, they should increase allowances by about 60,000 and then go to a flat rate of salaries tax. And that way, nobody would pay more than they do at present. And we'd have a very simple flat rate. And the flat rates of salaries and profits tax should be reduced because year after year, he announces these rebates, which skew the system. It's quite clear that they're collecting too much money at present. If in the future there's a need to raise that, then they can. But what you do when you rebate the 75% of the first $10,000 is that you help conglomerates with 1,000 subsidiaries. They get a $7,500 rebate for each subsidiary, and that isn't sensible. So there was only one good thing I could see in there, but it's only a half a good thing. They've decided to waive stamp duty on all tracker funds, basically ETFs. So if you want to buy the Tracker Fund of Hong Kong or some other instrument as your savings vehicle, you won't now be taxed on that purchase. And you ought to do that for all stocks, not just ETFs. They ought to abolish stamp duty full stop because it's a friction on the free movement of assets.
The spending on infrastructure is large, but isn't it an investment for the future? It will help things?
Well, there needs to be. We do have in Hong Kong a law on environmental impact assessment, but we don't have one requiring economic justification of projects. A lot of these projects won't have an economic rate of return. Disneyland never will, for example. It cost the government $22 billion just in the cost of reclamation and infrastructure. But the opportunity cost of 200 hectares of land is enormous when you could have put over 100,000 people in there, probably on housing or other facilities. There's just a wrong-headed approach to the whole thing.
Yeah, I think that's the problem with the logic of this government or the previous government also. You know, it's easy to claim that they have contributed to economic success of Hong Kong future by, you know, looking at building and looking at bridges. But then they never been able to invest enough in the people. Mm. When you look at the education system, we have now more than 30,000 sub-degree, associate degree holder who are, you know, nowhere in a way. They don't go to the technical part where, you know, Hong Kong need people who are, you know, good technicians, but not for sub degree, they don't go there. But they don't go the other way with a degree. But how to solve this problem is investment in the people, you know, in the future is on the education. When we talk about, you know, knowledge economy or we talk about creativity, you know, we really need to invest in the people and not just on the buildings.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about this, one of the amusing things is in the several pages of waffle at the beginning of the budget, right up there in paragraph 24 is a steadfast commitment to free market principles, unquote. And then he goes on to basically list a whole list of interventionist measures that deviate from those principles. So it's an incoherent budget, you know, by listing out these great things and then not doing them. I'm not entirely in line with Lee Chuk Yan on the question of training, for example, because the government seems to think that it's their job now to train shop assistants. I always thought shops trained shop assistants. And there's a bit too much, I think, of government subvention, basically, of employers by, you know, we'll train your hoteliers, we'll train your restaurant managers, and we'll train your shop assistants for you. On-the-job training is probably a better approach to that. But when you dump $15 billion into the Employees Retraining Board, of course they're going to find ways to spend it. So that part is now out of control and beyond Legislative Council oversight. They've pushed that out into the future.
Kenneth Lang, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us. It's a fairly sort of modest budget, isn't it? It's a fairly prudent budget, and it has a very simple message. We can't keep increasing our spending, you know, without increasing revenue. So we should get out of the habit of these sweeteners.
Well, I think this message has been repeated many, many times in the past. And in fact, I think, John Zhang should have released the report from the task force on the long-term, you know, financial, you know, management before the announcement of this budget. Why should he wait until next week to release the finding? Because, of course, I mean, the scenarios he has depicted, saying that the earliest structural deficit that will occur will happen in 7 years if we increase the spending on education, healthcare, and social security. But haven't looked at what are the basic assumptions of the report and how the figures are projected. How can we, as, you know, Hong Kong citizens, comment on this kind of, you know, doomsday scenario? I mean, it's just impossible.
Well, the projections are really just finger in the air stuff. When you're going out to 2042, I mean, we're going to get the full version of this report on Monday, I believe, but you can already infer from some of the figures that they've assumed, for example, that inflation will be 4.5%, because they've quoted nominal rates of growth of GDP and real rates. Who knows what inflation is going to be over the future? They've also, you can see an inference in there of a population growth rate of 0.8% per annum, which is about 50,000 people, 56,000, just happens to be in line with the 150-a-day permit scheme. But have they made any other assumptions about population shifts due to, for example, the rising wage rates in the mainland, which may reduce the attraction of moving to Hong Kong? Given our high costs of living here, there may be a point at which that 150-a-day demand declines. And we may see people moving more into the mainland for employment. So,
but surely it's just a statement of the obvious that if you increase, you keep increasing expenditure and you don't increase your revenue, then you're going to...
Just mathematical truism. It doesn't actually add much to the debate. As I said earlier, what they ought to be doing is not hoarding all this cash and feeling obliged to spend it in designated silos like the Capital Works Reserve Fund, but actually saying we'll collect the money later from ground rents when we need it. In line with our economic requirements.
In fact, the way they spend the capital works reserve fund is all on what Li Qiang said, bricks and mortars. In fact, I mean, under the mandate of that fund, you can spend on all sorts of capital, you know, expenditure. What I mean by capital expenditure is not just the physical infrastructure. And I agree that there would be coming a point of saturation because Hong Kong is just a piece of land about 1,100 square kilometres. And the connectivity of Hong Kong is quite good now. We've got all the trunk roads, the railway system, the MTR. But what they need to think about is how much should we spend on social infrastructure. But what I mean by social infrastructure will be, you know, our schools, our universities, our community service, all our environmental facilities. These are capital expenditures which are allowed to be spent within the mandate of Capital Works Reserve Fund. But I think...
It's not really what capital expenditure means, though, is it?
No, they are capital expenditure. And I've asked this question last week many times. They said they can spend on those things, but...
They could spend on education? They could spend on...
They get spend on the capital items of education.
Well, building schools.
Yes. Okay, building right. schools, yes. Building the Wi-Fi
building
system.
Hospitals.
Hospitals, they are capital expenditures. But what they prefer to do is to have this mega, right, Edwin, you know... infrastructure projects spending $10 billion here.
They have earmarked tens of billions to rebuild hospitals and build new ones, including the children's hospital, the acute care hospital, and so on. So, I mean, they're doing a lot on capital and recurrent expenditure on healthcare. And by the way, I should restate what I said earlier. They've assumed 1.6% inflation per annum. Again, who knows what it's going to be, but that's the difference between nominal growth rate of 4.4 and the trend rate of 2.8% real GDP growth. Again, that could be wrong. Another interventionist measure they announced was that they're going to pay up to $10 million per project, not per company, to support R&D, broadly defined, so broadly defined that I could apply for it to develop my database a bit further. If you, for example, are developing a new rice cooker and a new toaster, then you can get $10 million for each of those from the government. Now, this is just unnecessary intervention in manufacturing and industrial sector, or in any sector, frankly. If R&D is worth doing, companies will do it. They get the full tax deduction for the cost of their R&D. And why should we subsidize that effort? It just distorts the economy.
So do you agree that there would be a structural deficit in a few years?
No, I think there's a structural surplus now, and that's what they should be focusing on. They can stimulate the economy by not hoarding so much of the cash that we generate.
Okay, yeah. Story Lee, do you want to respond to that?
Well, I would like to respond to the criticism over the infrastructure spending. First of all, as I've mentioned, there are two reasons mainly account for that. First of all, is the price increase. Second one is loss of project. Currently going through approved in previous year. We can all think of a lot of a project that I've mentioned, a lot of railway, Southern Railway, Sha Tin Central Railway, we also face a lot of requests in the community, like we don't have enough hospital, we don't have enough community center. We actually urge the government to separate the queue for putting into the fund for putting into the infrastructure, because the brick project already crowd out the small project. This is the first response. In response to the criticism to the forecast, and I think, because forecast is forecast, and we're going to have the full report on Monday, and we can basically question the assumption, and assumption is never able to be right. But I think one of the very key message that this study would like to express is because the our current expenditure growth is higher than the economic growth, and if these continue to happen, we have to have a thorough discussion on this issue. I think that is a very key message that they want to deliver, and I think this is something that worth discussing within the community.
But some of the assumptions they will have made, I'm fairly confident they've made the following assumption, that the proportion of old people who claim welfare will remain constant. And that's not true at all, because the proportion of old people who have had the retirees of tomorrow will have much better lifetime savings and incomes than the retirees of 20 years ago, who are now 85 and struggling to get by. 75% of today's over 65 people didn't get secondary education. They all just finished at primary school and went to work in the sweatshops of Hong Kong in the factories. That's not the case for the next 20 years' worth of retirees. And so the projected costs of elderly welfare will not be realized. They'll be much lower than the government thinks.
Yeah, I think we can criticize that assumption when they release. But I think there are a lot to be discuss, like whether we can maintain 3-4% economic growth given the aging population. And well, you can argue in this way, but on the other hand, I do agree that the number of people who are eligible to take the elderly people benefit will on an increasing trend. This is something that we cannot but of course, because, we can say the forecast rate may be not realistic. We can argue
it's actually flatlined. If you look at the last 8 years of data, the number of elderly CSSA cases has been flat at about 110,000. Hasn't moved, even though the number of elderly people has been going up quite rapidly because of the demographic curve.
I don't think CSSA only. We're talking about other benefits, like the $2 subsidies to the local transportation and all the others.
stupid scheme. Okay, I mean, and again, it's an unfocused welfare system.
Well,
I don't need a $2 fare when I get to 65.
I think
a lot of people
David,
don't.
But it's well,
David,
well,
I thought.
I think we need to examine the issue of the assumptions, whether they're realistic or not. And under even we accept the assumption, I think there are different scenarios to be depicted, you know, based on different sensitivity analysis. And that's why that's the difficulty of this report. I mean, everyone will say, oh, it's unrealistic, the assumptions are wrong and things like that. But we need to look at it in quite detail. Although it is not a real picture, but the various scenarios it will depict will just give us the message. And I think they've spent quite a lot of time doing that. And let's wait until the report comes out and let's examine in detail.
Yeah.
The
$2 fare scheme is a classic example of waste.
But it's welcome by the community.
The
you don't need that, but a lot of
scheme,
people would welcome that.
I'd like a free handout too. But
I think the problem with the financial secretary talking about the future fund, he used the excuse of an elderly population, but there's no solution to the elderly population. He just wants to build more. Because what he's talked about, future fund is about capital infrastructure again. But if we really want to solve the elderly problem, of course, we would need a comprehensive retirement scheme. And we have to do it now, not on the future fund. Well, if we depend on future fund, it's too late already.
You don't need to have a universal handout scheme. You need to hand out money to people who need it, not people who don't.
I think we need a universal pension scheme. You know, I'm always disagree with you on David on this. You know, you are non-interventionist.
I believe in a social welfare safety net. I don't believe in just spraying money around. And I think you don't like it either when you think about the electricity subsidies, which they didn't put in this year.
But I think we need really security for the elderly population. And after contributing the whole life to Hong Kong, economy and the prosperity, they deserve something better than today.
Literally, I think I side with David on this point. In particular, I think a universal pension. I still have reservations, unfortunately. But not the set off. If you talk about set off, yes, I agree.
The same reservations as David Webb, that not everybody needs the money.
Yeah, not every elderly will need the money, although ethically you say, oh, these people have been working for 40, 50 years, let's give something back to them.
Well, to all the civil servants on defined benefit pensions should have handouts as well,
but,
do you think?
But I think it's
But they should also contribute, of course, if they during their lifetime of
well, you're,
to
you're,
their own
you're in favour
scheme.
Of basically a higher salaries tax, called a pension, a mandatory pension contribution.
And also employer-employee contribution and government contribution to a fund to really give universal pension to all.
Mm. Okay, hold that thought because we're going to break for 3 minutes for the news. We'll be back talking more about the budget and also be talking about the attack on Kevin Lau of Ming Pao with Shirley Yam from the Journalists Association. All that coming up later in the programme. Before the news, now the weather. It's going to be mainly cloudy today with a few mispatches in the morning and at night. Warm and sunny periods during the day. Humid in the morning tomorrow and at night in the next couple of days. Mild during the day. 19 degrees now, humidity 90%.
On RTHK.
Welcome back. This is Backchat on a Thursday morning, looking back today on the budget delivered by the Financial Secretary John Chung yesterday. Later, we're also going to be talking about yesterday's savage attack on the editor, former chief editor of Ming Pao, Kevin Lau. Your thoughts on those topics, very welcome. Email backchat@rthk.hk. Call us 233 88266, or you can go to our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio 3. Or indeed, now you can text us as well, 63935925. Also, a quick advert and a reminder that the financial secretary himself will be with us in our studio between 8 and 9 tomorrow morning. And you can put your questions and comments to him. He wants to hear what you make of the budget. So all those points can be made, as I say, tomorrow between 8 and 9 on the usual number, 233-88266, using all those contacts as well to put your questions directly to the Financial Secretary. Thinking about the budget now, we have with us in our central studio Executive Councillor and Legislator with the DAB, Starry Lee. Kenneth Leung, the Legislator, represents the Accountancy Functional Constituency. David Webb, a shareholder activist, founder of websites.com, and Lee Chuck Yan, who's a Legislator and Chairman of the Labour Party. And your co-host today is Ada Wong. And number 233-88266, we've got a caller on the line, George. George, good morning to you.
Yeah, hello.
Hello.
I just come into the programme, so I'm not sure it's been covered or not. But why can't we have a wealth tax or tax on dividends? I mean, it always talks about goods and services tax, which hits the middle classes. Why not hit the big fat cats? They have no salary. They get their wealth from dividends, right?
That's one for David Webb, I think.
Hello.
Yeah, that's for me, actually. I propose that dividend tax, and, we believe that the fat cat should, you know, pay their tax. And because, you know, when you look at their salary of the tycoons in Hong Kong, they can, maybe 50,000 a year for Lee Ga Sing. So an annual salary of 50,000, you don't have to pay any tax. But he had a 7.5 billion. Dividend without paying any tax. So
can I explain why we shouldn't do this? Mm-hmm. The reason we shouldn't do this is because dividends are paid out of after-tax profits. The profit's already subject to 16.5% tax. And if we introduced this effectively a double tax on profits by taxing dividends, then companies will just do share buybacks instead. People who own companies outright, private companies, will just pay themselves higher salaries and pay 15% salaries tax rather than 16.5% profits tax.
I think David has already offered a very good tax planning point by using share buyback.
Then you'll say, well, we have to tax capital gains as well. But then, of course, we don't have a global tax system. We only tax earned income in Hong Kong. So you'd have to start taxing dividends from overseas investments and capital gains from overseas investments, which would change our territorial policy or taxation. You just end up with so many complications on that. Basically, we do have a fair tax system. Li Ka-shing does pay tax through the companies he owns. Whether he took it all out as salary if they were privately owned and paid salaries tax, or whether they all pay profits tax and make no profit, you know, and pay him dividends. Either way, the government does get its fair take on income generated in Hong Kong. So right. That's why.
Starry Lee, which side are you on?
Well, I think, up to now, I don't think we have an urgent need to consider to increase tax to raise revenue. Well, but to be fair, I think Hong Kong's tax basis is narrow. And if we have a comprehensive review of the overall tax system, it will benefit the society as a whole. Reviewing tax base and tax system doesn't mean
I disagree that it's narrow. It's true that not many people have to pay salaries tax, but that's because not many people earn a lot of money here.
But when
those that do do pay their salaries tax, and you know, it's we actually need to move to a 15% or lower flat rate of tax. And not have these intermediate tax rates that just confuse things in terms of whether or not to share married couples' allowances and why gay people can't benefit from that system because they're not allowed to get married and so on. So, flat rates of tax would be more sensible.
George, are you convinced?
Oh, I understand now from what David said. It makes sense. I didn't know about that, but... I don't want to always hear goods and services tax because it just hits us middle classes.
Yeah, that would be regressive. And, also it would be against the basic law. We could do a value-added tax, but if we have GST, that means taxing all imports, and we're a free port, which is embedded in the basic law.
When you look at dividend tax, actually, it's not something that we invent in Hong Kong. It's everywhere in the world.
Yeah, we know that.
That's
but
a problem.
The problem is,
Singapore,
the
other places should abolish it. But you know, it's in U.S. And it really helped in really getting the wealthy class. You know, pay back to the society. You know, when you said Lee Ka Shing is paying tax through the company, that it's not really his own money. It's the company.
Well, yes, it is actually. He invested in it.
but when he, people contribute to, after investing, his profit, you know, multiplies so much.
He was successful. Is there something wrong with being successful?
No, it's not. He's successful because he exploited people. And so,
people, okay.
Yeah, the workers are also contributing to the company.
The good news is that we do have a competition ordinance. The bad news is that the Competition Commission isn't working yet. But we will eventually be attacking various cartels in Hong Kong, and perhaps that's why he was trying to sell Park and Shop. We don't know, but I suspect the profit margins there are a lot higher than they will be once the various restrictions of the competition ordinance come in.
Okay. George, you happy?
Yep.
Great.
Yep,
thank you very much indeed. Thanks for
always happy to help.
And number is 233-88266. You've got a question or comment for the panel, and maybe you could call today and call tomorrow as well. We're going to be talking to the Financial Secretary. On that topic, we've got an email, for example, from James, which is, I think, is addressed to the Financial Secretary, but I'd like to air it today as well, maybe. He asks, why is there no tax break for school education fees? James says he asks this question every year and gets platitudes and no answer. We'll try and push him tomorrow. He says that Hong Kong is one of the richest governments anywhere and could afford that.
Yeah, well, he has a point, because anyone who privately educates their children is relieving the state of that obligation. But I think a better way to compensate them for that would be to have a universal voucher for every child that can be taken to any school in Hong Kong and spent, including the state-maintained schools, including the private schools. And that way there'd be more competition between schools. We'd get better quality of education because they'd have to attract the students with these vouchers. And they'd get rid of their bad teachers and hire better ones.
Yeah, but there's a negative side
break
to...
Break the stranglehold of the unions, Mr. Lee Chuk-yan.
Yeah, but for sure it would have a negative side to the whole education system, because once you have a voucher, then it's an incentive for everyone to raise their fees. So it's not really a competition,
exactly,
but it's really...
with the kindergartens, that's exactly what happens.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the kindergarten had raised their fees.
No, not at all, because in fact that voucher system was crippled by a cap. You had to have mediocre kindergartens that weren't charging more than $2,500 per month. They deliberately didn't want people to go and spend that at higher quality kindergartens, so they put a cap on it. But I'm not in favour of capping it. I think if schools want to charge extra for better quality education, they could probably do that, certainly in the private sector. Maybe you put a cap on the state system if you're concerned about that, so that people can always use the voucher in one of the...
Yeah, but once you have the voucher,
schools,
then they will, you know, the private education will raise their fee to, you know, sky high, because you have already subsidized by the government.
Well, that's partly a question of...
That's all you should...
The poorer kids will never be able to get into the best schools.
No, they can't raise that. It's the basic supply and demand. They can't raise their fees sky high. They can only raise fees to the...
But don't you agree that it's a cartel as well, the kindergarten, to a certain extent?
Well, when you put a cap on the fees at which you can recover the voucher, in other words, if you price yourself above that, you can't get the voucher, then it has an
so how
it has
set,
the effect
how,
of capping
set
fees.
How threshold is a difficult question, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, the government probably should be looking at early years education as a universal right, and, you know, extending the system so that from the age of three upwards there's a guaranteed school place.
Okay, any other kind of issues? I-bonds, another tranche of
I-bonds, yes. But still, you know...
They're very popular.
Yep, it's good. I'll buy some if I can, you know, get my quota. But the real issue...
$5,000 or whatever it is.
Yeah, the real issue there is that we don't have a retail bond market. The reason we don't have that is because the Monetary Authority doesn't require banks to get best execution on bond sales and purchases. And so the banks run a captive market with a very wide bid-offer spread for most bonds, except for the I-bonds, which do actually trade on HKX. But there are thousands of bonds listed on HKX that have never... done a single transaction there because that market is kept for the professionals only. Now, if you actually had a retail participation there, it would take money away from the bank's deposits, which only pay 0.01%, and you could actually go into the stock market or bond market and get a better yield on your money while you were deciding what to do with it. So we could have a bond market, a retail bond market in Hong Kong that was probably as big as the stock market if the government would actually require best execution.
And land supply as well. They've got about he did speak about that at some length and name various sites in the budget. Is that enough, the plans?
I have to ask a developer that, but I mean, there's vast amounts of potential supply. It's interesting the government still doesn't want to tackle all the thorny issues like the small house policy in the new territories. They'd rather just try and create more land in the sea where no one has a prior claim on it, or around the shorelines at Sunny Bay and Lantau and places like that. So one thing they're not doing, though, is allowing the market to decide the best use of the land. So they've earmarked six sites on the Kai Tak Peninsula for hotels, And at a time where we're worrying about whether we have too many tourists, they are restricting the use of land to hotels and thereby underpricing it. If they actually said, here's six pieces of land, what will the market bid for them? And you can use them for any purpose you like, other than industrial, that might annoy the neighbours. So is it going to be an office, a hotel, or residential? That way, hotels would only be able to pay for land that was justified on an economic basis. The room rates would rise until the value of hotel sites was the same as an office site, and then they'd start winning land auctions again. But instead, the government says, no, let's have six new hotels there because we think, in our wisdom, that's what the market needs.
And the Disneyland is also building two new hotels.
Yeah, and they can't even borrow money from the market, apparently. They've got to borrow money from the government for that hotel. Now, that doesn't seem to make any sense to me. Why?
Well, I think it's an injection both by the holding company and the government in the same proportion as they hold the equity, I think.
They've also asked for a loan from the government at, I think, HIBOR plus 2% for about 10 years. But why don't they just go to the market and pay market rates for those loans? Doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense to build more hotels, actually. When we Hong Kong, we have a problem that we are thinking that we don't have really enough transportation and other infrastructure for handling too many tourists.
So the government is on record as recognizing that if they auction this land on an open basis, it would not be hotels.
But that piece of land which Disney is building a hotel is in between the two existing hotels, which, you know, Disney is already operating.
Yeah, that chunk of land is going to be a hotel for Disney. but why does the government have to lend the money to do it? Why don't they just borrow money from banks or issue bonds?
I mean, we don't have a mature, bond market in Hong Kong. That's one of the missing piece, maybe.
No, that's a different issue. It's professionals only. There's no retail bond market.
We haven't really spoken about the suites.
There was nothing on MPF either, by the way. No proposal to abolish it. No proposals to make it better. Full portability, for example, and basically putting to bed the long service payment scheme, which is in direct collision with it right now. That's what's stopping the full portability.
If there's no setup, there's no full portability. I think literally I must agree with that.
I think but the CE spoke a little bit about that in the policy address.
Yeah, but the negative part, saying that he won't do anything. He would not abolish the offsets provision between the severance payment and the MPF.
Well, I think he didn't say he wouldn't, did he?
He didn't say wouldn't, but he didn't say anything. And he only says study now.
It would study.
Once he said study, it means that he won't do anything. I think when you talk, when you look at the language of government, once they say they will study, that means that they won't do anything yet. Or maybe not in the near future. So we have to wait on that. And it's very disappointing for us in the union, of course.
All right, let's finish off with the dessert and the sweets. And Starry Lee, what do you think about so there's an increase for allowances for dependent parents, grandparents, salaries tax rebate, the rates waived for first two quarters rather than the whole year, so on, extra allowance for CSSA. Do you think that level is about right? Do you think he's weaning us off, tapering the sugar?
I think, it's never enough, to be honest, but I think it's about the right level because in response to the middle class requests and the different stakeholder requests, I think, and given the financial situation, I think the government is able to maintain some sweetener, although the size has decreased given the increase in recurring expenditure.
But given the surplus, couldn't you have done more?
Well, yeah. Well, but we all know that there are a lot of things still going on in the society, like we have a group to discuss the retirement benefit and all the other may require additional resources. And I think, I think at this time it is the right balance if we can look at the actual financial situation, we can still consider to increase this wisdom. It is relatively easy to increase than decrease, right?
Well, but one thing I think we haven't talked about is the possible financial injection in the housing authority. The HA is predicting a deficit in 5-10 years time because of the cost of building units. It's been soaring up from $700,000 per unit now to about $1.2 million per public housing unit, and then it's a prediction that the government will need to inject at least $50 billion in 5-6 years' time, and another 50 billion in 10-12 years' time. I mean, all these projections. I don't know how real it is, but it is a kind of financial consideration we need to take into account.
Yeah, the government actually doesn't need to build all the public housing. They just need to rent it. So they could provide rent subsidies, which would make it more transparent as to what the real cost of public housing programs is, and let the private sector build these things, and just send checks to the tenants who need the rent support, rather than piling more and more capital into ghettos, basically, where they ring-fence people in public housing estates. Let's let everybody live anywhere they like in the community, as long as they can afford the rent through the government's rent subsidy. So that would be a better approach to public housing, in my view. And the rates, rebates, again, it would be better to cut the rate of rates rather than to just engage in these so-called sweeteners, where it ends up skewing the benefits. If you have 100 outlets of Park and Shop, for example, you'll get 100 rebates on your rates. I have two car parking spaces and one flat, and they're each separately rated, so I get the benefit three times over. Is that really fair? I don't think so.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's not fair at all. So actually the rate wave should only be limited to residential. And also, when you have the two quarter of 1,500 each, with the same money, why don't we have, four quarter of 750 each quarter? It would benefit the elderly, or because they own small flat and they pay less rate than 1,500, so they still have to pay a rate after half a year. So I think we can
on the allowances, although they've basically, when they say they've increased the elderly deduction from 38,000 to 40,000, that's only a little bit more than inflation. It's slightly over 5%. So it's really no change at all. But they haven't changed the salaries tax allowances. So in real terms, those have gone down by about 5% because of inflation.
Mm-hmm. We never had the issue of sweeteners when we don't have that much surplus. So we should actually look at the surplus and see that there has been wrong estimates for the last.
And actually, for a change, next year he's budgeting a surplus rather than a deficit. I mean, he's been consistently wrong for years now. There's been a.
So that means we're going to get a deficit.
So
next.
No, we should get an even bigger,
bigger
surplus. I mean, if he's projecting 8 billion, we're going to make 20 or so, because there's always.
And because it's so wrong, he has to give us some sweeteners. But sweeteners is just one off, and it really should not happen.
Okay, comment from Housing Estate Brett to wrap up, who says. Since the cost of land is included in the cost of goods and services on offer in the territory, everybody pays tax as it's included in everything we purchase. Was it Starry Lee who said that our tax base is narrow? That's very scary if that's the thinking of someone in her position, says the Housing Estate Brett. What about that point, Starry Lee? It's often made that we do pay tax. We pay it indirectly.
Well, I understand we have a thorough discussion during the time when the government want to introduce the sales tax. I understand this argument, but I think it need more time to debate.
Does the DAB support sales tax?
Oh, no, at that time. But I think we don't need to do that to talk about how to increase the tax base at this time. And I don't think the government have the capacity to do so. I think we have already too much controversial.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed, Starry Lee, Executive Councillor and Legislator from the DAB. Thanks to Kenneth Lung, Legislator David Webb from website.com, and Legislator and Chairman of the Labour Party, Lee Chuck-Yan. Thank you all very much indeed for joining us today. Bring the time now to just coming up to 24 minutes past 9 on Backchat this Thursday morning. One more advert for the Financial Secretary phone-in. That's between 8 and 9 tomorrow. You can call us on the usual number 233-88266. It's best to call because we give priority to phone calls rather than emails, but you can email as well, backchat@rthk.hk, with your questions and comments on anything that's we've been talked about this morning. You can talk with directly to the Financial Secretary tomorrow. We wanted to turn now